I wonder if you've ever been mistreated before, if you've ever been lied about, or if you've ever been accused of something that you've never done. If you've grown up with siblings, I'm sure that that would have happened very often. I wonder if you've ever been through hard times, ever been through something where you feel like, actually, that was a little bit unfair that I was on the receiving end of that. And then I wonder in those situations, which I think probably for all of us this morning, we would have been in at least one of those situations at least once in our lives. I wonder what your response was in those situations. I wonder if you were angry or if you were sad. I wonder if you cried a lot or ate a lot. I wonder if you desired revenge. I wonder if there was unforgiveness in your heart. I wonder if it led to behaviour for you that you know wouldn't please God. I wonder if it led to questioning of actually, where's God in the middle of this situation? And more to the point, why has he allowed it to happen? We have started a series in Joseph that kicked off last week. And if anyone knew anything about unfair treatment or being lied about or accused, it was Joseph. This guy was loved by his father, hated by his brothers to the point that they wanted to see him dead. He was sold by those very brothers to a bunch of Ishmaelites, and now he finds himself as a slave in a foreign land. Darren's going to come and read Genesis chapter 39.
Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. The Lord was with Joseph so that he prospered, and he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. When his master saw the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in his eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care of everything he was owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and of all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptian because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care, with Joseph in charge. He did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. Now Joseph was well-built and handsome, and after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, "Come to bed with me." But he refused. "With me in charge," he told her, "my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God?" And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even to be with her. One day he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. And she caught him by his cloak and said, "Come to bed with me." But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. When she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. "Look," she said to them, "this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." And she kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. And then she told him this story. "That Hebrew slave you bought us came to me to make sport of me. But as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house." And when his master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, "This is how your slave treated me." He burned with anger. And Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. But while Joseph was there in prison, the Lord was with him. He showed him kindness and granted him favor in the eyes of the prison warder. So the warder put Joseph in charge of all those held in prison, and he was made responsible for all that was done there. And the warder paid no attention to anything under Joseph's care because the Lord was with Joseph and gave him success in whatever he did.
Thanks. Okay, so here you've got Joseph and he's in Egypt and he's brought by a guy called Potiphar, which I discovered this week is really hard to spell. Maybe not for you, but man, oh man, spell check was going red, crazy. So verse 1, we find out that Potiphar is a captain for Pharaoh. So he's got loads of military experience, and he's probably a guy that you don't want to mess with. And Joseph begins to work in his household. Now, I think what transpires throughout the chapter is actually the life of Joseph isn't the life you would expect of a slave. If you look in verse 2, it says that the Lord was with Joseph. This slave was flourishing. Now, that's a really key thing. The Lord was with Joseph. It's repeated 4 times throughout this chapter. And guess what? The Lord was with him, and it was noticeable to others. See, Potiphar saw that the Lord was with Joseph and gave him greater responsibility. He put him in charge of the household. Actually, for Joseph, at this point, life was quite good. And the result of the Lord being with him and the result of Joseph being put with greater charge around the household was that the Lord blessed Potiphar's household. It went beyond Joseph to the household. Things ran smoothly and there was material success. Now, I think it's fair to say that when we talk about blessing and God's blessing, we don't always mean material means. But actually, on this occasion, it was. The Lord was with Joseph, and it was clear to see. See, and then the slave got promoted again. It wasn't just the once, it was twice. And then Potiphar puts Joseph in charge of everything. Look at verse 6, except for the food that he ate. So Potiphar was either a fussy eater or Joseph was a rubbish cook. We don't know quite which one. So the only thing Potiphar took care of was the food that he ate. So check it out. You've now got a slave that is running the household of a top military man. Imagine now what the headlines would be about that. God was with Joseph, and it was clear for everybody to see. It was clear. And if that's not enough, you read in verse 6, Joseph was a very handsome man. He was well built, and we won't dwell on that this morning. Life's gone from bad to good for Joseph in this time frame because God was with him. Life was good. Now, I don't know if you know, I'm a youth worker by trade. That means I talk to a lot of teenagers. And when you ask them kind of how they're doing with God's stuff and their faith, often you hear, do you know what, Jen, life's good, so I've kind of forgotten about God. I'm getting on well with my friends, my grades are good at school, my family aren't on my back, so I've kind of forgotten the whole prayer and reading my Bible thing. When life's good for us, do we remember that God's with us? So for Joseph, life was good, God was with him. But when you're reading a story, if you were reading it for the first time, you might start thinking at some point, this is going to go wrong. And sure enough, it does. Joseph becomes on the receiving end of, I think we should say, some unwanted attention. So Potiphar's wife, verse 7, she's one direct and eager lady. She's like, Joseph, come to bed with me. Come and sleep with me. And guess what? She don't even take no for an answer. Verse 10 says, she goes to Joseph and she says it day after day. There's a woman who knows what she wants and she's going to try and get it. How things have changed for Joseph from the time when his brothers were standing around him plotting to kill him. And now he's got Potiphar's wife trying to entrap him. You've got to wonder, actually, whether Joseph could have got away with this. He's a guy who's in charge of Potiphar's house. Potiphar doesn't concern his affairs, doesn't get involved with it. And you've got Potiphar's wife offering Joseph sex on a plate. Could he have got away with it? But Joseph doesn't even contemplate that. You don't see him weighing up the options. You don't see him dancing around with the idea, should I, shouldn't I? he refused. Look at verses 8 and 9. He is loyal to his master and he is loyal to his God. He's a man of integrity and a man of obedience. See, Joseph ain't stupid. He knows that God is with him, and it actually affects the way that he lives. It affects the way that he lives when he's faced with temptation. Because what does he do? Verse 12, he runs. He runs and leaves the temptation behind him. That's a good man right there. And what are the consequences of Joseph acting in such a good way and such a godly way? He resisted temptation and he done what would please God. We find out in verses 13 to 18. These are the consequences of his actions. Potiphar's wife then goes and tells a whole pack of lies about Joseph. He gets accused of attempted rape. He gets judged by Potiphar and sent to prison for a crime that he never committed. And he was a slave, no rights and no appeal. And where's God now? The Lord's with Joseph. Where is he now? See, the passage tells us that he's still there. He's still there and he's still with Joseph. But that doesn't mean that Joseph avoids hardship and trouble. It's hard, perhaps, to see what happens to Joseph with Potiphar's wife and then getting flung into prison as God's blessing. Because actually, our human nature is, if someone does something good, they deserve rewards. If someone does something bad, they deserve to be punished. And good things deserve blessing, and bad things are an example of not blessing. But actually, that's not the way with God. See, if ever there was a point for God to step into this story, you would say, right, okay, this innocent man has been accused of something that he hasn't done, and he's now being flung into prison. God, now's the time that you come and you speak up. And guess what? God doesn't. It says in Isaiah 55, verses 8 to 9, my ways are not your ways, neither are my thoughts your thoughts, declares the Lord. So what happens for Joseph? Well, things, quite frankly, they just go from bad to worse. God's with Joseph, and that affects the way he lives. But actually, God's with Joseph, and it has an impact upon his hard times. See, it says in verse 19, Potiphar, burning with anger, throws Joseph into prison. And you've got to think, man, Joseph's so lucky to be alive. Did Potiphar believe his wife? Because if he did, actually, Joseph got away quite lightly. And here's Joseph again in prison, a victim of other people's spite, suffering wrong for doing right. And in that isolation, in that loneliness, in that place of little hope, I wonder, what would our response be? Accused of something that you haven't done and facing the consequences of that, how would you respond? For me, man, I know I'd be kicking up a fuss. I'd be protesting my innocence and telling anybody who gave me 2 minutes to listen to me that I did not do it. I didn't do it. And yet we do not see in this chapter Joseph doing that. How does he respond? There's no mention of resentment or bitterness or anger or sulking or complaining. What do we read? Verse 21. The Lord was with Joseph. And it's not a kind of, oh yeah, we know God was with Joseph. It's got a concrete outworking. In verse 21, it says he was shown kindness and granted favor by the prison warden. You can see God's hand in Joseph's prison experience because he's given responsibility again, just like he was given responsibility in Potiphar's house. Different circumstances, same God. And so Joseph is given favor by the prison warden and he's trusted with the prisoners. They don't even take care, like have a look at anything that's under Joseph's care. That's how much they trust him because he's a man of integrity, a man of honesty. And eventually, Joseph is going to be noticed by the king because of the people that he meets in prison. And let's be clear about this. See, Joseph, in that moment in prison, he wasn't aware of what his future would be. He couldn't skip forward a couple of chapters and see what was going to happen to his life in the way that we can. He didn't know the ending, and yet he knew that the Lord was with him in those hard times. And so where is God in the hard times? See, in the good times, we can sometimes see God. In the questionable times, we can sometimes just about see God. But in the hard times, in the prison experiences, in those times when actually life just isn't fair, where is God? Verses 21 to 23 says, the Lord was with Joseph. That's where God was. He was right there with Joseph. He never left. He never left. And so what about us then? So we read this about Joseph's life, and we can think, well, it's all right for Joseph, man. He had a coat of many colours, so he's so different from us. Or maybe we think, well, we can't just blindly apply what happened to Joseph and God being with Joseph to our lives. And maybe there's a bit of truth in that. But guess what? There's still one thing that is still the same. So for us sat here in East London today, this is the truth that remains the same. God is with us. And God is with us because it's about him and it's not about us. It's about who he is and not about who we are. Psalm 121 and verse 4 says, God never slumbers nor sleeps. God don't go away for a siesta, wake up and go, oh man, what's happening in their life? I missed that one. Shouldn't have fallen asleep. He never sleeps. He's always watching and he's always there. Hebrews 13 verse 5 says, I will never leave you or forsake you. In the good, in the bad, in the evil experiences of life, I will be there. I don't go off on a fag break and then come back and say, oh, drop the ball again. I am there with you. I am there with you in the good times and the bad times. And Jesus himself says to his disciples in John chapter 14, you're not alone. I'm not going to leave you as orphans. I'm not going to leave you by yourself. I will come to you. And so this morning, I don't know what you're experiencing, whether it's sweet or whether it's bitter. No matter how long what you're going through has lasted, this is the truth that was for Joseph and is the same for us today, that he's with you. And then I guess the question for us is, do we really know that? See, because you can know it here and it has no bearing on how you live your life. Or you can know it here and it is worked out in our day-to-day life. Do we really know that God is with us? Do we really let it affect our hearts and our lives? Do we let it shape the way we live? Does the knowledge that God is with us affect how we live when we're faced with temptation? See, I don't know about you, but there's stuff every day looking to trip me up. For Joseph, it was no strings attached sex. You know, actually, maybe that's the case for some of us this morning. Or maybe it's gossip, the temptation to share stuff that you know you shouldn't. Maybe it's the temptation to log onto a website that you know that you shouldn't be on. Maybe it's putting money and power and status before God. Maybe it's being jealous and envious of somebody else's life, their grades, their house, their kids, their family. 1 Peter chapter 5, such a great image, talks about the devil prowling around like a roaring lion looking who to devour. I don't know if you've ever seen images kind of on TV and stuff of a lion looking for his dinner, and he's just like slowly walking about, eyes looking everywhere, ready to pounce at any moment. It says in 1 Peter, guys, if you're believers, be alert. Be alert. When temptation comes, be alert and remember God in those moments. See, Joseph really knew God. He really knew God when Potiphar's wife was coming day after day after day, badgering him. And what did he do? Verse 9 says, he ran. He ran. He didn't dance about. He didn't flirt with her. He ran. You can't give in to something that you're running away from. It's humanly impossible to do. He ran. Joseph remembered God. And I think often our sin isn't because we hate God, it's because we've got forgetfulness of God and who he is. We forget that his love is better than life. We forget that fullness of life can only be found in Jesus. We forget that in Christ we have an inheritance, heaven, that will never spoil or fade or perish. We forget that actually God's the only one that can satisfy us and not the stuff that comes in our direction in a form of temptation. Joseph, in the face of temptation, knew that God was with him, and it shaped the way he lived. And what else? It shaped the way that he viewed his hard times. Joseph was tempted and lied about and accused and judged and punished. And yet, we see God actually weaving something beautiful through his life and through his situation and his circumstances. And that's a continuous feature throughout Joseph's life. And I'm sure you'll hear kind of people standing up here and almost saying the same thing week after week. That God was there all the time working all things together for Joseph's good. The knowledge that God was with Joseph affected how he viewed his hard times and how he responded in his hard times. And what about us? What about us here sat today in London, so far removed from Joseph's situation and circumstances? See, life can be hard and painful and equally unfair. And do you know what? It's easy to look, is it not, at our immediate circumstances. You lose your job, someone lies about you, you're isolated from other people, and become confused and say, actually, what's going on here? Like, God, what is actually going on? In those very moments, it says in Romans chapter 8, verse 28, in those moments, in all things, God is working for your good. In the hard times, God is working for your good. In the good times, God is working for your good. Whether you feel like it, whether you feel like you can see it or not, God is working all things together for your good. He hasn't forgotten us. He's with us, just like he was with Joseph, because the God we serve is unchanging. Now, I've probably had little suffering compared to a lot of people in London, and maybe actually a lot of people in this room. But Jesus says, actually, you should expect it. He says in John chapter 16, verse 33, expect trials and sorrows on this earth. And maybe you're sitting there thinking, man, do I know that to be true in my life? Big time. Jesus says, take heart, because I've overcome the world. And I guess my encouragement this morning by looking at Joseph to you is to say, in those situations, in those hard times, when life seems so unfair that we say, God, give me eyes to see things how you see it. 2 Corinthians says, our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. Give us eyes to see how you see it, God. After I had my son, Nate, it was about a year and a half ago, we had to stay in hospital for a couple of days because of suspected infection, blah, blah, blah. We was in a room by ourselves in the London hospital, newborn baby and I. My husband wasn't allowed to stay over. He had the pleasure of going home to his own bed. And I've got to say that actually those two, like maybe 3 days, was it? I just got a little bit emotional because I saw Paul. They were really, really tough, really tough, really dark. And actually, I'd look back on that time and say, man, that was such a hard time for a variety of reasons. And a few months ago, someone said to me, Jen, if you had to look back at that time and say, where was God in the midst of that hard time, what would you say? Now, I'm someone who believes that God is with us all the time. I believe the stuff that I'm speaking this morning. And, you know, I look back at that time and I said, I don't think God was there. I think if he was there, he was well and truly outside the door because he weren't in the room because it was flipping miserable. So I believe one thing, and actually the way I was living my life was completely different. And I was like, God, okay, let's pray about this. If you say you were there, actually, where were you in those times? Where was you when it was really difficult? And talking to Paul and stuff, it was really interesting just remembering kind of moments where actually, you know, when you just think, I just cannot take any more, and someone would walk through the door and just be so kind, so kind. Or when you think, man, I have not got it in me to even pray in this situation because I ain't got words to describe or express the way I feel. And just like laying there and saying, God, you've got to do something. And then my parents like walk through the door. And actually, in that hard time now, I can really see things differently. I can actually see moments where God was there and God was at work. And that doesn't change the fact that that was a hard time. But actually, I know that somehow, and I might not fully know now until I get to heaven, that was God working all things together for my good. God was with me in that room when it was just me and Nate and it was miserable. And that's true for you guys too. Whatever situation that you're in this morning, this stuff is true. God is with us. And I guess for us as Christians, our greatest example of God being with us and working all things together for our good is actually found in Jesus. One of Jesus' names and titles is Emmanuel, which translates as God is with us. And so Jesus, leaving the joys of heaven, the utter goodness of heaven, he comes to earth. He lives a perfect life. We actually read about his life that he himself was tempted and didn't give in to that temptation like Joseph. He was lied about. He experienced rejection. He was found guilty too of a crime that he didn't commit. And he was sentenced to death. He was punished and he was beaten and he died. I would say that's unfair. And yet 3 days later, guys, you know the end of the story. He conquered death and he rose up from that grave. And the consequence of the unfair treatment that Jesus suffered on the cross is that we're forgiven, is that we now won't face the punishment that we deserve, that we can be healed, we can be set free, and we can live in the fullness of life that Jesus offers us. The greatest example of God working all things together for our good and being with us is actually found in the death of his son. So God was with Joseph, and it affected how he lived and how he responded to hard times. How do we live when we're faced with those same challenges this week, this month, this year? Because you know what? We don't face them alone. It says in Matthew 28, verse 20, Jesus says, "And surely I am with you always to the very end of the age." I'm just going to finish on this. When I was looking at this chapter and preparing for this talk, I was thinking about Joseph and about us and thinking about God and the fact that he's our good shepherd. And that what you see through Joseph's life and our lives is the way that God is the one who guides Joseph and he guides us through green pastures, through the times when life is good, but also through the valley of the shadow of death, pursuing him and pursuing us all the days of our life. Maybe I'll just finish by reading this psalm. So if you want to close your eyes or kind of just quietly sit there. The Lord is my shepherd. I lack nothing. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He refreshes my soul. He guides me along the right paths for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, I will fear no evil. For you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely your goodness and your love will follow me all the days of my life. And I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.